Hello, golfers, and welcome to the On Par podcast. Before we get started, I just want to say that I hope this podcast finds you well and safe. And if any of you who are listening are a first responder or are in the healthcare field, allow me to take a minute to say thank you for all that you are doing. These are difficult days that would be unimaginable if we did not have people like you. So thank you for being you, and thank you for what you're doing to keep people safe and healthy. Joining me today will be Stephen Lapper. Stephen is part of the ownership team at Fox Hollow and Paramount Country Club. Without question, Stephen is one of the good guys in golf, and given his position, I thought he would provide a unique perspective regarding the difficulties the golf industry is facing. But first, a word from our sponsors. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Frank Rossi of Cornell University. As the stewards of New York's golf courses, superintendents are dedicated to protecting our natural resources. In heavily developed areas like Long Island, golf courses offer large expanses of open space that provide environmental benefits, such as allowing water to infiltrate into the ground naturally and providing habitat for native species such as bees and butterflies. To help manage golf courses in harmony with the environment, the state's golf industry has established a comprehensive best management practices program to educate and serve as a resource for superintendents. For more information, see our website at nysgolfbmp.cals.cornell.edu.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, and welcome back to the program. Pleased to be joined on the line with Stephen Lapper. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. How are all of you? I hope you're all doing well.
Yep. So far, we're all safe and sound, and I'm happy to know that you are safe and sound, and your family's doing well. And I appreciate your time to coming on the program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I think it's one of those times where I'm absolutely just thrilled to spend some time with you, Anthony, and maybe. Give your readers some interesting insight into kind of how these crazy COVID-19 times are affecting golf and what we are seeing and what we think we're going to see and how the future will probably change for us as metropolitan golfers.
Stephen, obviously the golf industry has faced an economic crisis before. What makes this one different?
So that's a great question. And the answer is this one's different because it affects our health.
Right.
Economic crises hit our wallets, but we have our health, and we find ways to work ourselves through. This one hits our health. It does hit our wallets. It hits our psychology. It changes dynamics of even how we live. All of a sudden, we're living inside four walls without a lot of opportunities to get outside. That has a big psychological impact on people, big physiological impact on people. Much of which, I don't even know if people have truly coming around to understanding how much of that's going on. But nonetheless, I think it's what really separates us from, say, 2007 and 2008 is we are genuinely and rightfully fearful and nervous about how we expose ourselves to other people. That's a very different dynamic than worrying about whether or not our stock portfolio or our mortgage is going to be worth what it was a week, a month, a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. This sort of it's a nuanced kind of fear. We all experience fear and anxiety on some level in regards to everyday life, whether it be work or whatever the case may be. But this idea that this type of fear is more nuanced in the sense that you can't see it, right? This invisible enemy, this invisible enemy that we so call that's out there, it brings another dynamic to this whole situation, which I don't think people really are paying close enough attention to. And I think, to your point, the psychology of it has a much greater impact than people are willing to either admit or we're even talking about in the public to the extent that we should be.
I think that's true. And then also I think we have to look a little forward and realize it's going to have an impact on how we actually behave as a society, how we interact with others, how we enjoy our activities, how we go about our daily lives. I don't think we're going to return to anything but a new normal. And that hasn't been fully defined, but I think with a little bit of forethought, you can all clearly see certain things are going to have changed. And that is very true for golf. And in some ways, I actually think golf would be better off. In other ways, golf will have a different economic profile insofar as who's doing what and where and when. And it will certainly have a big, big change on the service profile, how people approach the game, whether it's carts, whether it's caddies, whether it's at private courses or carts at both, that public and private, what kind of food and beverage services, what kind of amenity packages. There's all kinds of change that's going to be coming up.
Well, before we get to what it'll look down the road, let's talk about some of the challenges that private clubs like the ones that you're part ownership in are facing at the moment. Obviously, we know the obvious. Golf is not being played. Outings are not being had. Service has been pretty much halted at this point. But operationally, some of the challenges may be different than what maybe people think.
So that's a great starting point. So let me start with the basics. All the governors in the Northeast who have wisely chosen to talk to one another and set up sort of a regional council have all allowed for maintenance to continue on golf courses. They recognize, A, that it doesn't call for large gatherings of people. B, these courses are living, breathing things. You can't just let them lie fallow. Although literally some people have. I've heard stories of some good courses where the superintendent couldn't get people or they couldn't bring them back or haven't brought them back yet. And that obviously is problematic because once we are allowed back uniformly on all the courses, we want to enjoy their conditions. We want good conditions.
Sure.
So jumping from there, the most negative and devastating impact obviously is on the employees, whether you're a private or public club. Those guys who prep the carts, those guys who take your credit card for a tee time or sell you a box of balls or your pros fitting you for new shoes or your locker room attendant is cleaning those shoes or you have different people, waiters and waitresses who serve you food. Those people are hurting right now. They really are. Club to club varies in whether or not the clubs are taking care of these folks. Typically, the general managers at all of them are staying employed because they have to crisis manage the situation. And that's certainly the case for us at Fox Hollow, which is a semi-public, semi-private. My partner and I do most of the managing in our head pro. And while we had to put our head pro on furlough for a little bit, we were very lucky to receive a federal loan, and we've since hired him back. So he really had minimal disruption. At Paramount, our ownership structure has decided that we are going to take our key people, keep them on the payroll, only furlough any of the others. We certainly won't fire anybody. We're like a family up there, and nobody wants to shed themselves of their family members.
Sure.
Although after sheltering in place for a couple of months, I'm sure that's not necessarily the case for everybody. So that is a big injection. I want to give you some breaking news, and you should get this out as soon as you can, Anthony.
Sure.
Today, New York State clarified the rules, and I actually have new language. So we are going to be opening up Paramount this weekend as we speak.
Really?
Today they declared golf non-essential. They've always permitted maintenance, as I said. They are not asking. They do not want employees coming back for anything other than security and maintenance. But Private operators of golf courses may permit individuals access to the property so long as there are no gatherings of any kind and appropriate social distancing of 6 feet between individuals is strictly abided. So the MGA and the PGA of the Met section, as well as our general manager and fellow owner, have all determined that this will permit us to play golf. We have decided personally to, A, tee people off in 15-minute increments because we don't want people jumping up on one another. We don't even want golf balls from other foursomes to land at the feet of people. B, we'll start from the off the back nine where we have better visibility, where people can see who's ahead of them. We don't want piling up at the tee boxes. So we're going to practice safe golf, do so as soon as possible. I know our course is in fantastic condition. Our super has been diligent, and he's so emotionally invested in presenting a great product that it's always good. So I'm very excited. I think people need it. Unfortunately, right now it's private courses. I'm hoping that by May 15th or June 1st, that extends to public courses.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Cuomo, being a golfer, it doesn't hurt the industry. But
sure,
I say this for both him and Governor Murphy, who's not a golfer, being that Fox Hollow's in New Jersey and Paramount's in New York, that these folks have the weight of the world on their heads, and they're looking out for our safety, and they're concerned about once they can guarantee that there are beds and ICU beds for people, and our healthcare people are not overwhelmed. They'll focus then on opening up the economies. And I don't, as a golf course owner, I'd rather take the loss and suffer the pain than to press on my politicians and governors to open something up prematurely.
Sure.
Or to put us at risk. You know, it's a game.
Yep.
It's April. We're not, sometimes at this time we're talking now, Anthony, there's snow on the ground.
Yep.
So let's not get crazy or ahead of ourselves. Some people do. Of course, we've had some nice weather days. Everybody wants to get out. No, you know, we get it. Believe me. But on the other hand, let's look at things in perspective. People are dying. People are sick. Our healthcare professionals are putting their necks on the line. And we have to understand that golf really isn't a high priority here. And I say that as an owner. I say that as somebody who's going to take some economic heat for this. But frankly, it'll come around. As the days get warmer, I'm sure the governors want nothing more than to get their states open. So we're sympathetic and empathetic. We're already thinking of charitable functions. We've already made sure at Fox Hollow that if you're a healthcare provider, you're going to play for free for a while. I can tell you that we're going to be doing some other things that we're thinking about, but we want to give back. And I'm sure I speak for everybody at Paramount. That's pretty much the way we look at things there too. So our attitude is how can we turn our facility into something for the best use of all the people we can possibly extend it to?
That's fantastic news. I'm glad that, thank you for the breaking news. And that's awesome that your members will be able to begin playing golf again. And yeah, we all have to have a little perspective here, and I really appreciate the sentiments. I have, my wife's in healthcare, so she, I understand the risk that people are taking all too well and how taxing it is for these people to do what they do from a physical standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. It's been very challenging. So that's great. Are there any other restrictions that you have to operate that you'll be operating under?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we jokingly in the industry are calling it safe golf, in much in the lines of safe sex. So while we won't be putting plastic bags over our head, we will be, for example, we're not going to break out carts.
Right.
And the real reason is because we need employees to clean carts and sanitize them, and we're not going to try to reinterpret the rules So no carts for a while. Mm-hmm. And I want to come back to that later because I actually think that's a net positive, but I'll get there. I'll come back to that.
Sure.
All the ball washers, anything else you can touch, I'll get to the flag sticks in a second, they've been taken out. Mm-hmm. We have put little PVC blocks at the bottom of our flag sticks so that the ball actually rests. It's not pointing up the cups like we have at Fox Hollow, mm-hmm. but it is actually a place where you can get the ball out of the side without touching anything. So Matt Cairns was brilliant. At first, he put in some pool rods, whatever they call them.
The noodles. Little
floats.
Yeah.
The noodles. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we cut those and put them into the cups. So, you know, we have an opportunity to give our members real golf without giving them without putting them at risk. As far as the flag sticks go, we put out a sign: please don't touch them. They remain in. You hit them. In our case, whenever you hit one of our flag sticks on our greens, it tends to go exactly in the wrong direction. It never gets closer, and you're left with a much more difficult putt than you were before. But that's a side point. But you know, we're going to practice safe golf. We're limiting for now people to twosomes and threesomes. Mm-hmm. Even though foursomes some out there might think, oh yeah, well I can stay away from three other people. Bottom line is, when you're going back and forth to the tee, it's altogether too easy to find yourself 2 feet from somebody else and not think twice. Mm-hmm. So with twosomes and threesomes, people are more aware of the distance. We think that's a smart move for now. All of these things will be reconsidered as time goes on. Obviously, our locker rooms are not open. Obviously, we are fortunate to have some outhouses with codes on them, so we'll be using those. We have put out pallets of water, individual water for people. We have put out pre-made sandwiches and snacks for people to take. And, you know, we're really going to do whatever it takes to practice safe golf. Obviously, no bunker rakes. We ask people just to smooth out their footprint, and we're generously giving people relief in the bunkers to find a stance and a lie acceptable to them. And the USGA, to their credit, has already recognized most of those things as well.
Sure.
So, you know, we'll operate under that premise for as long as we need to. I'd like to go back and talk about carts and talk about caddies now. I think it's a good time. I really believe the game going forward is going to shift. I think people who have previously not bothered to walk or carry or push a push cart will be thinking twice and probably doing so, recognizing that the exercise component of this is great. Completely unrelated, I bought myself a new light bag last year just because my heel and knee had finally gotten better, and I wanted to get back to walking and carrying, so that was fortuitous.
Sure.
I think we're going to see single rider carts eventually once we're allowed to. I don't see double carts unless they're a family member anytime soon.
Will clubs have enough carts for that kind of procedure or policy?
Well, I think clubs will end up actually, for as long as they need to, they'll actually order more carts. And that's good for the cart industry, too. Because right now, I can tell you that I doubt very many of the clubs have paid in full their cart fees for the year. Most clubs lease them and don't buy them. And I'm sure the Club Corp and Yamahas of the world are being accommodative and understanding, but it'll be helpful even for their business if all of a sudden you're leasing or buying 50% more of the carts because you can't fit everybody out on the golf course without doubling up to a cart, so you'll need more carts.
Right.
So we're already looking at that. I think, again, it's a net positive that people get back to walking. I think one of the most interesting things we're going to see, and it's got a good and a bad side, is I think we're going to see caddies have a horrible year or two. It's mm-hmm. very difficult to imagine letting somebody carry your bag hand you a club 50, 60 times out there. And, you know, for you to be close to somebody to ask them information or for them to line up your putt. And, you know, caddies are a hearty group. They're independent operators for the most part, but they're loyal usually to the clubs and the members who they're used to dealing with. And I think it's going to be very difficult to get the caddy culture back anytime soon. That's the downside.
I wonder if caddies would be willing to repurpose themselves in the meantime, just to stay with a particular club, knowing that that this would be a tall ask for asking people to come in close contact with them. Like you said, maybe they'd be willing to do other things just to stick around, as opposed to being let go or being furloughed.
And that may well be the case, but you have to remember a lot of caddies aren't necessarily suited for those skills.
Yep. Yeah.
A caddy who's a good caddy on the golf course may not be the same person who can serve you a drink.
Right.
Or who can be a good employee in the pro shop. It's too hard. And again, I think it'll be very difficult because we have our existing staffs. We want to really remain loyal to them and bring them back from their furloughs as soon as possible. I think, unfortunately, caddies are going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
I do. I was a caddy once. I feel for them. But on the other hand, maybe they'll find opportunities in other states. They tend to be somewhat vagabondish anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel for them. Maybe we'll take up a pot for them or a kitty or a fund for them. But right now, I just don't see where they're going to fit the equation in the Northeast for this year at least.
Sure.
And maybe not even next. The benefit of this is I think clubs that had previously looked at push carts as being unsightly or beneath their reputation are going to reconsider that. And because older gentlemen who would have to take carts because they can't carry their clubs or they have back issues or orthopedic other issues can push a cart. And we've seen it in Scotland, Ireland, Australia for literally the best part of the last few centuries.
Yep.
It's been a long tradition in those places I just mentioned to you, and your continental Europe and South Africa and South America, all places I've played golf, that push carts are, in those places, more common than motorized carts. So motorized carts are more endemic to the United States than most people think. Or U.S. and Canadian golf. So I think we'll see a return of the push carts. And I think that's a healthy thing. And people can own their own, or the club can charge a small fee and acquire some or rent them. All of that's a little uncertain right now. But I know some of my friends ran out this winter and bought them. I think they had a run on Amazon.
Yeah.
Most of my fish. So I think it's healthier. I think it's great for the game. I'd love to see a course full of people pushing carts, quite frankly. If they don't want to carry, and heck, that's their decision, I totally understand it. I don't have a problem with them pushing carts on a private course. I'm in the minority, mind you. I don't want to tell you I'm not. But given where the risks the caddies will bring to the table this year, and again, I'm pro-caddy. Don't misread me.
No, I understand.
Given those risks, I'm wholly willing to see push carts make a return. And personally, I would have no problem if they remained afterwards either. But that's a whole other issue, and that's only my personal opinion. I think I'd be outvoted by my partners on that one.
Sure, sure. No, but I think it's an interesting point in the sense that you're right. People might being forced to reacquaint themselves with carrying their bags might find a new joy in the game that they probably had lost a long time ago that they had forgotten about by just constantly jumping in a cart and racing around. And you know,
that's right.
That can change. You don't have to carry a bag for 18 holes. Maybe you do a push cart for 9 and carry for 9. But the idea of being out and walking around and you may reacquaint yourself to a wonderful aspect of the game that you had since lost.
That's right. And also, you know, you could get you can granularize that down to people are going to finally feel the ground underneath them.
Yeah.
They're not going to reach up to their ball and walk out and hit a golf shot. And golf will also keep a reasonable pace, albeit maybe a little bit slower. But you will. It's already going to be a little slower because of social distancing.
Sure.
So I see it as. I see it as a net positive. I think it'll be heart healthy. It'll be physically healthy, mentally healthy for people. On the other hand, I want to tell you quite honestly, I know that I'm going to need to have some emergency, emergency medical equipment on the golf course.
Right.
Because I can't ask people who've never been used to walking, who give it a great effort and go out there and walk and get in physical trouble. I can't ask them to – I can't expect them to – to come out and not expect me to have some, some defibrillators on property and things like that. You just got to do it. You have to anticipate all the risk if you can.
Well, and you also might have limited staff that you're bringing back. So the fact that you have people out on the course and maybe someone's at a far end of the property, if you have limited staff, that's part of the, I think that was part of the people feeling concerned or being liable. When things first shut down, there was some confusion. Am I going to open? Am I not going to open? Some private clubs were open, some weren't. That was definitely probably one of the concerns, having limited staff and feeling liable. Golf a bit, something happened.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. But remember, when you have limited staff, you're not really as liable as you think. There's no real legal opinion that says you have to have so many people on your place.
Right.
You just have to make sure that, reasonable people have to make reasonable assumptions. And in this case, we know that if at Paramount, we have a much older demographic population. So if we're asking them to take out push carts, we have to expect that some of them will find it stressing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to try to offer carts as soon as we can, as soon as we can bring back staff that can adequately treat and sanitize those. Yes, we will be bringing those back as well. I think a lot of facets of the game are going to change. I think, too, that some of the economic impact of COVID-19, and we haven't really talked about that, will have a negative impact on the club manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people are going to be rushing out to buy all the newest and greatest equipment as quickly as they used to.
Sure.
On the other hand, I think we'll be growing the game, meaning more people will play. People who haven't thought of it as a attractive sport are all of a sudden going to, or an attractive activity are all of a sudden going to give it a go. I think millennials who, there's 73 million millennials in the United States. I think those people have been loath for the most part to embrace golf, except for the cool faction of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those people will be coming into the game now too. They recognize its health factors. I also think government, when we come out the other side of this, government will recognize that golf is truly a healthy activity. So I think there's a lot of pros and cons around here, and I think golf is really going to be impacted in a major way. We have seen the majors, which have been interesting to me, how they've reacted. I think I probably rank them as Augusta and the British Open being the smartest of the two majors, in my opinion, so far. Augusta obviously has its own controlled environment. Obviously, they're not doing it for the money, but they're doing it for the tradition and the competition. So moving to November makes a lot of sense. I've been in that area of the world in November, and I got to tell you, the courses could be really fast and firm or really wet, but for what we're missing in blooming azaleas, we're going to find in rock-hard greens, I can assure you of that.
Sure.
And I also, I think the British was smart. They get very big crowds. If you've ever been to a British Open, you're typically staring down 150, up to 140, 150,000 people on the course on a day.
Yep.
And that's a lot of people. And it depends on the venue, but you do it in a place like St. Andrews, and all of a sudden people are wall-to-wall in town or wall-to-wall on the course, and it's great and exciting. So I think I know the Royal St. George's fairly well. It's not a big It's not a small course, but it's not a big town or a big venue.
Right.
And I think they quickly understood that holding the Open there would be overwhelming. I think the U.S. Open has been smart in the USGA to play it as it goes. I know Wingfoot's in magnificent condition. I was there. I'm friendly with a number of the people involved in the club and in the tournament. And they were ready to hold it last year. They've just been so dialed in. I feel for Steve Rabidaw, their head greenskeeper. He is fantastic, and he's put together just one heck of a team over the last 5 years. And Gil Hance just finished a big project up there, redoing both courses, and it's glorious. And a shout out to Neil Reagan, who's their historian and general golf course architecture aficionado. They and their governance committees have just done a magnificent job of getting that place ready. So I'm sad we won't see it in June, but maybe we'll see it in September. I don't know. I'm hearing it's a strong possibility. I'm also hearing that if for some reason it doesn't come up this year, they'll push everybody back a year and Wingfoot will have it next year. So I say to you and your audience, heck, it's going to be here. Let's be patient.
Yeah,
we have bigger things to worry about. But it's going to be in our backyard, and it's going to be one hell of an event and on one hell of a course. So let's all just be patient and stay healthy until then. And that will give us a one heck of a week of excitement, I assure you.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. And believe me, I mean, if – you know, Westchester in the fall will be a beautiful time, and it'll be a beautiful atmosphere up there as well.
You bet.
You bet.
In fact, I hope
if
anybody's going, let me know. I'll meet them up there. I grew up there. I caddied there. I still know every break on those greens.
Oh, we get to know. So I wanted to shift gears because you mentioned a lot of this sort of going forward and how it's changed. I mean, I just wonder what's going to be the country club experience. I mean, so much of it is based on service and a lot of contact. I'm just curious what you think, how the landscape is going to change going forward from a service standpoint, and then we can bridge out from there into, you know, in terms of public courses and private clubs, who's not going to make it, and so forth and so on. But just in terms of the everyday experience, how do you see that changing in the next year?
It's a great question. So I can give you a little anecdotal information, which is trickling in now, which is more people are interested in joining both clubs of mine than we've seen in a long time. A lot of that, I think, has to do with the weather.
Sure.
I think a lot of that goes to what I discussed. I think golf will grow because of its outdoor benefits. I think we're starting to see people consider golf clubs as a something they can do in the next crisis like this. God, hope we don't have to have one,
mm-hmm.
but should there be one, they see this as an appropriate outlet for them. But again, this is anecdotal. It's trickling in. We're having a lot of interest. We'll see what happens. But your essential question, how's the experience going to change? It's a fabulous one. So you're right. Private clubs have always been dependent upon delivering a great experience. Public courses try to do the same, but they're not. The experiences are vastly different.
Sure.
When you go to a private club, you meet the head pro, you meet the assistant, the man or the gal who runs the shop. You meet your general. Maybe you meet your general manager. Maybe you don't. You meet other members, they become friends, you wine and dine with them, your families are friendly, you share pool, tennis, other amenity packages with them and services. And you're right, it builds a big community at a private club. That is definitely going to change for the next year or two. I don't see pools, for example, being very popular for this summer. Why? Of course, everybody wants to take a dip and the chlorine's pretty safe. But I don't think anybody wants to lie in a chair next to each other.
Right.
I don't think people want to see, no matter how good a guy looks in a bathing suit or a girl looks in a bikini, I don't think people want to see it this summer.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a troubled summer for some of the other amenities. And I think we already know it's going to be difficult on food service. So, for example, at Paramount, We have a fabulous, fabulous team led by Doug Gabbard, our general manager. And we are actually taking all three of our spaces, our banquet, our main dining room, and our patio, and we're already designing enough room to have our memberships enjoy those indoor experiences at safe distances. We're also buying picnic tables and putting them out so that when the weather's good, we're going to encourage people to eat outside at safe distances. We've already started a process of making to-go food for our members. We've had that in place for about a month. That's turning out pretty good in some spots. I think we will be severely negatively impacted on our banquet facilities and banquet business this year. Not our facilities, our business. I don't think people will be holding mass get-togethers, whether they are weddings, christenings, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, that kind of stuff. I think we're going to see a downtick in large functions for that. And if those who are still able to do so, will do so in larger spaces. And everybody is always limited by the space they have and the tents they can put up. So we'll make those accommodations accordingly. I think, too, it'll be very interesting. I think psychologically, I think people are dying to get back to see the people they know.
Yeah.
I think people are dying to go to say hello to a face they know, to see whether it's the locker room attendant, the waiter, the service person, or their fellow members. I think everybody is jonesing, for lack of a better term, to get a taste of the camaraderie.
Yeah.
And I think that extends both ways. I know some of our kitchen staff really is eager to see the members come in. So I think we're going to see, I hope we see, a resetting of expectations and an ability for people to really appreciate other people for who they are and what they contribute to each other. Instead of finding differences, I hope they'll find similarities.
All right, folks, that concludes part one of the interview. I hope you enjoyed it, and stay tuned for part two.